He's Hacker.
I like a good serial killer documentary. He hasn't taken the pounding that wide receivers take.
It's just a pound job, and guys are tired towards that 4 minutes.
And he doesn't shy away from opinion.
I would be lying to you if I said I had not heard things. They're like a bad rash. You hear a lot of things. Some are true, some aren't.
It's Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
And a very good Monday evening to you, Jacksonville. It's Hacker After Dark, before dark. Obviously in for Rick Ballew, who's in for Frangie and Carline this week here on 1010XL and on 92.5 FM. With Dylan Denmark, I am the Hacker, Ryan Green. We're glad you are with us on a Monday that we have gone from 68 down to the Sweet 16. Only two SEC teams remain. Six have been eliminated, including, of course, the Florida Gators last Friday. We'll spend a little time on March Madness coming up later on in the 7 o'clock hour with Mark Wise of the ESPN family of networks. We'll also do a little post-mortem on the Gators as their season did come to an end. But obviously, early on, it's going to be all about the Jacksonville Jaguars. The NFL meetings down in Orlando, Florida. Doug Peterson held court earlier today. Had a lot of really interesting things to say. A lot of things that I certainly took note of. We'll play you some of those comments. Jamal St. Cyr of Channel 4 was front and center for those comments down in Orlando. He will join us coming up later on in the program, as will the head coach here on Hacker After Dark, my friend Dave Campo. It's always a little Monday night coaching with Campo during the season. And we'll get the head coach on periodically. And coach had some things to say about some of the things Doug Peterson had to say earlier today. So Dave Campo will join us in less than 20 minutes. So Dave Campo, Jamal St. Cyr, and Mark Wise all coming up between now and 8 o'clock this evening. Every night here on Hacker After Dark, we do give you a big deal of the night. And Dylan Denmark, let's do that right now.
Time now for the big deal of the night.
What's the big deal?
What is the big deal?
No big deal.
It is a big deal.
On Hacker After Dark.
Today was the first day that we had an opportunity to hear from Doug Peterson since free agency, right? Since the arrival of Mitch Morse and Gabe Davis and Eric Armstead and Darnell Savage and Devin Dumervey and Joey Sly, Trevis Gibson, Ronald Darby, on down the line, Mac Jones, that trade that was made. They brought in a lot of guys, a lot of newcomers here to Jacksonville. Obviously, it was the first time as well that you got to hear from Doug Peterson since the departure of Calvin Ridley and since the releases of guys like Rayshon Jenkins, Foley Fatakasi, and Darius Williams. You just think about what I rattled off. Guys that are here, guys that are no longer here, and all of that has transpired in the last 2 to 2.5 weeks. There's been a lot of stuff to digest for you Jaguar fans recently, and Doug Peterson addressed a lot of it today. Let's talk with Doug Peterson, get some of his comments of what he said down in Orlando earlier. Again, Jamal St. Cyr of Channel 4 was down there. He joins us tonight at 7 o'clock. First and foremost, Doug was asked earlier today just his thoughts on all the free agent arrivals now coming to Jacksonville.
Right. I mean, obviously, we haven't played a game yet, so we don't really know. But I feel like we've added some pieces through free agency that are going to help us. They give us depth. We got some experienced guys in like Eric Armstead, Mitch Morse, who can really add some, one, the competition you're looking for, but two, I think a veteran presence at those positions. You know, a guy like Mac Jones to come in and solidify and really give us three quarterbacks that you're going to need, you know, as we've seen, as history would say. You know, our number one thing, though, is to keep Trevor healthy. Our best chance of winning games is keeping Trevor healthy. You know, so I feel like we've, and then re-signing guys, you know, like the DTs, right? Daniel Thomas and Caleb Johnson and restructuring Brandon and, you know, getting Ezra Cleveland back and just being able to kind of work through your roster that way and you know, getting the guys that are going to help us win football games moving forward.
You know, Trent Baalke at that press conference he held a month after the year, everybody was so focused on Josh Allen and Calvin Ridley. But if you go back and watch that thing, one of the things Baalke alluded to was getting stronger on the offensive and defensive lines, getting more physical, right, on the offensive and defensive lines. And you look at what Jacksonville did right up the middle on both spots. Mitch Morse, the new center here in town. Eric Armstead, the brand new defensive tackle here in town. So they address that. You address Ronald Darby at corner, replacing Darius Williams. Darnell Savage in the secondary. We'll get to more of him in just a moment because Doug Peterson had some interesting things to say about Darnell Savage. And that brings me to Gabe Davis. And I'm going to ask guys this week, beginning tonight, guys we have on both locally and nationally, the Gabe Davis thing to me, I think locally we're more excited about that than folks outside of Jacksonville are. To me, that has Christian Kirk vibes from 2 years ago. Remember Christian Kirk? That was lambasted by people. People hated that outside of Jacksonville. What are you doing paying Kirk that much money? Massive overpay, yada, yada, yada. And when Kirk's been healthy, he's been very good. And you see what Kirk meant to this offense, because when he got injured last year, the offense was drastically different. You don't hear anybody saying negative things about the Christian Kirk signing anymore. I think lightning's going to strike twice. I think Gabe Davis, by his production, what he's going to do here, will silence a lot of the naysayers. But there is no doubt that right now, nationally, the Gabe Davis signing in Jacksonville is not liked. I've had many people on from Sports Illustrated to Sporting News to CBS that say they just didn't like that signing. They don't like the fit. All right, fair enough. They're entitled to their opinion. What about the head coach? Doug Peterson in Orlando earlier today was asked about the arrival of new wide receiver Gabe Davis.
Gabe is that to me, he's like a Swiss Army knife. You know, he can run routes. The guy's right around 81, 82 targets a year for the last 4 years. You know, if you average them out, so he's a big part of the offense. You know, in Buffalo, and I think he's going to be another key piece to what we're doing. And you know, we can put him in positions to block. We can put him in positions to run. He's a good route runner. He's strong. He's big. He's local. You know, I mean, all things are positive with Gabe, and really looking forward to getting him in there and seeing how he does fit with Christian and Zay, and, you know, even Devin Duvernay now, getting him in that mix, and obviously Parker Washington, Elijah Cook, some of the young guys we have. It should be a really good, exciting offseason to see just how we can make all these pieces work.
And maybe I'm too over the top on the Gabe Davis signing, but here's a 24-year-old. He's going to turn 25 next month, so he'll be 25 when the season comes. So a 25-year-old that has 27 career touchdowns. And what I like about Gabe Davis, it's not as if 1 year he had 14 of those touchdowns and every other year was like three or four. He's been as consistent as you can possibly be. 3 years of seven touchdown catches, and his one quote-unquote bad year, he had six touchdown catches. If Gabe Davis comes in here in 2024 and catches seven touchdowns for the Jacksonville Jaguars, do you need him to do any more than that? I don't think so. If Gabe Davis comes in here and catches 65 balls for 900, 1,000 yards, and seven touchdowns, guess what? That's basically what Calvin Ridley gave you last year. I think Ridley had just over 1,000. He had eight touchdowns. All right. But that's all you need Gabe Davis to do. Gabe Davis, you're not expecting 1,400 yards and 15 touchdowns. You're not paying him like that. That's not your expectation. Your expectation is for him to come in here and be like Christian Kirk and be like Zay Jones were 2 years ago. And even those guys, Kirk especially, got paid a lot more than what Gabe Davis is getting paid. I don't understand why nationally that signing here in Jacksonville is getting frowned upon as much as it is. I like that signing, and I think Gabe Davis is going to be a valuable addition to this roster. Another guy that appears to be a very valuable addition to the roster is Darnell Savage. And you say, well, I don't really know much about Darnell Savage. Yeah, former first-round pick, spent 5 years up in Green Bay. The thought was that Darnell Savage was going to come in here and play safety, right? Replace Rayshon Jenkins. So you'd have Ronald Darby and Tyson Campbell as your corners with Andre Sisco and Darnell Savage as your two safeties. And then all of a sudden, Doug Peterson down in Orlando today had a lot to say about Darnell Savage in a positive way, including Darnell Savage might not be a safety after all here in Jacksonville.
His nickel coverage ability inside, his ability to blitz, he's a good tackler, he's a willing tackler, he's a pretty good cover guy, you know. I mean, just all things that we were looking for at that position. And he's got the versatility to play multiple spots, too, on defense. So he does give you that safety flex if you want to do it. He can play that nickel spot if you want to move him in there. We have a young kid, Antonio Johnson, that's going to be a nice little, work in progress there with these two guys. And just excited, again, to get him in and get him working when he can.
So if Darnell Savage is going to play nickel, does that mean Antonio Johnson is your starting safety? And again, if Darnell Savage is your nickel, then all of a sudden, when you're having the corner conversation, particularly in the first round at 17, and you have Tyson Campbell, Ronald Darby, and Darnell Savage, presumably, right, if he's your nickel, does that take corner off the board at 17? And what I like, I believe it was Jamal St. Cyr, who we're going to have on in just a bit, asked Doug Peterson flat out, is Antonio Johnson then, coach, is what you're saying, is Antonio Johnson the replacement for Rayshon Jenkins?
I think so. Moving forward, I think that's the thing. But he can also compete, at nickel as well.
It gives you flexibility.
Gives you flex. Exactly.
All right. So by that token, it looks like your starting secondary, at least right now, is Tyson Campbell, Ronald Darby, Darnell Savage, because Savage will be out there a lot in the nickel, with Andre Sisco and Antonio Johnson. Very interesting. That's something you learn. Again, a lot of us, including myself, just assumed Darnell Savage was going to take over for Rayshon Jenkins. That appears not to be the case. Finally, and this is what I want to elaborate on in just a bit, Doug Peterson not only talked about the free agent additions, he also talked about the collapse, losing 5 out of 6. Keep in mind, it's been 78 days since the season ended. Over 2.5 months. And Doug Peterson was asked earlier today down in Central Florida about the collapse and it not being the standard they want here in Jacksonville.
Yeah, you're obviously as a coach, you're hopeful that's the motivation, right? I mean, the way we finished the last month and a half is not our standard. And it's not what we talk about. It goes against everything we talk about, really. And we still had opportunities all the way to the 18th week of the regular season. So, we're there at the end. We just got to figure out a way to kind of push through that envelope and be there. And credit Houston. I mean, they battled their tails off all year. They were much like us a year ago in 22. We had to battle our tails off to get where we got to. So credit to D'Amico and his staff and those players in Houston, for winning the division the way they did.
And listen to this from Doug Peterson. Final thought, at least from Doug for right now, and then I want to elaborate on this. Doug was asked, and keep in mind, Doug Peterson has been the highest of highs as a Super Bowl champion in Philly. He obviously had a bad departure from Philadelphia. Takes over here in Jacksonville. Obviously a great first year, ultimately losing in the divisional round. As much as he's been a backup quarterback, an assistant, part of the NFL for a long, long time, Doug Peterson has certainly seen a lot, but he was asked again about the collapse, losing 5 out of 6, and listen to how Doug Peterson talked about the collapse.
For me, it's not so much that loss as much as it is the last, 6 games. When we were sitting there at 8-3 and we had everything going for us and right in front of us, I don't know if I'll ever get over it. I think for me, it's going to be my motivation, my fuel, moving forward. And I'm not going to let it cloud the vision, but at the same time, it's going to be close in my mind as I move forward with the team this spring.
I don't know if I'll ever get over it. You know, the Jaguars became just the sixth team. That's six. The sixth team since the year 2000 to start a year 8-3 and miss the postseason. I mean, it was a historic collapse. You could argue it was probably the biggest late season collapse in the history of the Jacksonville Jaguars. The only other one I would even compare it to, and I think it's probably worse, was I want to say in 2010, the Jaguars were 8-5, and then they lost their last three games to lose the division and not make the postseason that year. Losing three in a row when you did not have a lot of high expectations compared to losing five out of six when you were the overwhelming favorite coming in the division. I think 2023 is the worst late season collapse in franchise history. But to hear the head coach say, "I don't know if I'll ever get over it," good. I mean, that's good, right? You as the fans, you suffered with that collapse. You were unbelievably frustrated. It goes to show you that frustration was magnified, you know, tenfold in that building. With it being 78 days after the fact, and Doug Peterson is still talking about it. And if the coach feels that way, one would assume that the players feel that way as well, which is good. Any motivation this team can get coming into 2024, there's nothing negative about that. Anything you can use is fuel. Because the AFC South went and found itself in a real darn hurry, man. You look at the money Tennessee spent on Calvin Ridley and Tony Pollard and Lloyd Cushenberry and bringing in LeJarius Sneed this weekend and a trade from Kansas City. You look at what Houston did, winning the division and adding Danielle Hunter, adding Joe Mixon, adding DeNico Autry. Indianapolis didn't add very much, but they kept their own, right? Michael Pittman, Grover Stewart, Kenny Moore, all re-signed to get Anthony Richardson back. If you're the Colts. So the Jaguars are going to need some motivation. They're going to need some fuel because the AFC South went from arguably the worst division in football 12 months ago to, dare I say, one of the best going into 2024. You have three legitimate teams that believe they're playoff bound, Indy, Houston, and Jacksonville. And in Tennessee, with the amount of money they spent, they probably think they could make the playoffs. There is not going to be an easy game in the division this year. So anything you can find to motivate yourself, particularly in the offseason when workouts begin next month, good. And if the head coach says that he doesn't know if he'll ever get over the collapse and he's going to use that as motivation, you would imagine Trevor Lawrence and all the fellas are right there behind him. It was a historic collapse. There's no sugarcoating that. But perhaps they can use that collapse in a good way, in a positive way, moving forward to ensure something like that will never happen again here in Jacksonville. 641-1010 is the phone number on the phone line and on the text line. Designed by Lifetime Enclosures, your texts are welcome here on Hacker After Dark. Again, in for Blue, Hacker After Dark. Before dark, let me save you the time of texting me or messaging me. But Hacker, it's before dark. Yes, I'm very much aware. We're on early this week, 6-8. Blues on 3-6. That is the way we're rolling for the next 5 days. Coming up next, my buddy Dave Campo. He's our head coach here on Hacker After Dark. During the regular season, you always get Monday night coaching with Campo. The head coach joins us periodically during the off season, and tonight is one of those nights. I want to talk to Dave Campo about some of the things Doug Peterson said earlier today. I also want to talk, you know, we always refer to Dave Campo as the former head coach of the Dallas Cowboys, which is true. But the guy's a defensive guy, man, between being a coordinator, a DB coach. He's been on the defensive side of the ball for decades in the National Football League. The NFL banned the hip drop tackle today. They banned it. How are you going to tackle somebody that's running ahead of you right now? I don't know how they're going to do that. Because it's going to be a 15-yard penalty based on the rule that they passed today. So I want to ask Dave Campo, who spent a majority of his life coaching defense in the NFL, what do you do now about the hip drop tackle? How is there going to be rulings on that? The referees, that is going to be so unbelievably subjective. I think it's a joke, be honest. But I'll ask Dave Campo his thoughts on that as well. Monday night edition, Hacker After Dark with Dylan Denmark. I'm the hacker, Ryan Green. Jacksonville, we're glad you're with us. Dave Campo next on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. Doug Peterson met the media earlier today down in Orlando at the NFL meetings. Had some interesting things to say. And with that, I want to bring my head coach, Dave Campo, former head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. He's our guy here on Hacker After Dark, as a lot of what Doug Peterson said had to do with the defensive side of the ball. Coach, how we doing?
Doing great, Hack. It was an interesting press conference yesterday. It really probably, because of the owners' meetings, is a more relaxed situation down there. I think we got more probably out of Doug than we would in a normal press conference.
Yeah, look, it was very interesting, some of the things he said. And let's start right off the bat. Now, people know you as a former head coach, and you were with the Dallas Cowboys, but you spent decades on the defensive side of the ball as a coordinator, as a DB coach. You are certainly a defensive guy. So your reaction when Doug Peterson said earlier that Darnell Savage is going to be the nickel, it appears, and as it stands right now, Antonio Johnson is the replacement for Rayshon Jenkins.
Well, first of all, let me say this. I had a little concern when he was picked or grabbed in free agency about talking about the nickel position for him. I watched a little film this morning on him, and I'm changing my mind just a little bit. You know, I think they're going to be a quarters type of a football team, which is match coverage, which is really man within the zone. And to be honest with you, he is faster than I thought he was. I also looked at some of his background. He ran like a 4.36 at the combine. So this kid can run. I think the weakness that he had there in Green Bay, and just watching, I watched a game of Green Bay. He's not a super run defender, but he is a cover guy. And I think originally he was drafted to be a man cover safety, and they went to more of a zone package. So to me, to be honest with you, I think he's the nickel, and I think he runs faster my name just escaped me, the drafted safety.
Oh, Antonio Johnson.
Antonio Johnson, yeah. And so I can see him being a nickel. And the guy that I loved, obviously, was Darren Woodson back in the day with the Cowboys, because he could play safety and nickel. But I think he's more of a nickel-style type of a guy anyway.
Now, what's interesting, if Darnell Savage is the nickel, and that's what Doug Peterson alluded to today, he is Trey Herndon's replacement, it appears, right? And you go into nickel coverage a lot in the NFL. You're probably in that far more than you are in traditional defense. So, Coach, if it is Tyson Campbell, Ronald Darby, Darnell Savage as your top three corners, if you will, I mean, do you see that now as still a very pressing need heading into the draft?
Well, I think having a young corner, obviously, that can play the position. I'm not sure how they feel about the guys they've got, but, you know, if there was a great corner at number 17, I think they would still really consider taking him, depending upon who else is around. But if he can be a solid nickel, that really takes a little bit of pressure off of making a pick that is a need as opposed to the best player that's there when they make the pick. There's no question about it. I'm a little bit more intrigued with Savage now after watching that tape this morning.
I like hearing that, because you certainly know what you're talking about when it comes to defensive backs. And that brings me to Antonio Johnson, Coach. He played a little bit down the stretch, certainly, made some nice plays down the stretch, but the bottom line is he's never started a game in the NFL, and now it appears he is going to be your starting safety opposite Andre Sisco. What is your thought on the Antonio Johnson part of this?
Well, I think he proved last year that he can play in the league. And I think that's what's important, because, you know, obviously as a DB coach, when I was active doing that, I was a little concerned with putting a young guy back there But in essence, he had enough play last year to give him experience enough to really, you know, you can feel pretty good about him. I think he's a good tackler. He is physical. To be honest with you, I think he's not, has a chance to be a pretty good safety. So to me, I think he probably is going to be the safety, and Savage is probably going to be the nickelback.
Couple of more for our head coach, Dave Campo, here on Hacker After Dark. Coach, the competition committee earlier today has banned the hip drop tackle. Your thoughts on that? I mean, you already can't hit guys in the head, obviously. You can't go low to the knee. You can't rough them up when the ball's in the area or you're going to get flagged. And now you're going to have to adjust the way you tackle. I've seen a lot of negative reaction from defensive guys on social media. You are a defensive coach. What's your reaction to the hip drop tackle being banned earlier today?
Well, you know, it's obviously it's a little like the grabbing by the back of the neck tackle, you know. The horse collar. I think safety is something that's really important in the league. I think the more rules that you make like that, it really kind of waters it down a little bit, because that could happen at any time. A lot of it is just out of necessity. You can't get the guy down, and you do whatever you have to do to get the guy down. So it's probably going to lead to more penalties. I'm all for safety, but I think when you start watering the game down to where, you know, people watching the game look at it and say, you know, how did he make that call? Or, you know, why is that roughing the passer? Or, you know, the more of those things that you get, the more difficult it is to as a player and as officials. So, you know, I'm hopeful that, you know, they're trying to just make it so that a guy uses technique to do everything in the league, as opposed to just being a rough and tumble football player. Unfortunately, because they've cut back on the amount of time that you can work on technique and tackling and all the length of training camp, all that is counterproductive to what they're trying to do with safety, in my opinion.
Coach, I have no idea how they're going to enforce that. The horse collar tackle is obvious, right? If the hand goes into where it's not supposed to, it's a horse collar. Yet the hip drop tackle is going to be so subjective, and we're talking about a 15-yard penalty and an automatic first down. That, to me, potentially could be a cluster you-know-what when it comes to the officials calling that.
Yeah, basically that's what I'm saying. I think it's going to be subjective, but you could say the same thing about roughing the passer. You know, if they're going to call a penalty, if a guy's being coming around the corner and a offensive tackle gets his into him and he gets a little bit knocked off balance and he hits the quarterback in the knee, they call roughing the passer. Or a guy comes in, makes a good solid hit on the quarterback and can't get himself turned to where he lands on top of him, it's roughing the passer. So in my mind, all of those things are a little bit subjective, and it makes it more difficult for the player and the official.
Final moments here with Dave Campo. Coach, final question. Earlier, Doug Peterson was talked about the collapse at the end of the year, you know, losing 5 out of 6. And we're talking 2.5 months since that happened. It's been a considerable amount of time. And Doug Peterson was asked, has he gotten over it yet? And I'm paraphrasing here, but essentially he said he's not sure if he'll ever get over something like that. And when you hear the head coach say that, you got to think that resonates with the players as well. That's got to be a lot of fuel, a lot of motivation, I guess, heading into this offseason.
No question about it. And again, you know, that in itself, first of all, you know you're going to lose some games. And you just, when you get in a situation where you're sitting there with a chance to be the, you know, the number one seed in the AFC, and then to go on a streak where, you know, you lose 5 out of 6, that stays with you for a long time. You talk about motivation. That's even more motivation than if you're going along and you lose 6 games or so during the season, or 7 or 8 games, and they're, you know, split up with a win here, a win there. You know, when you get on a losing streak like that, it's awful tough for a coach to put that out of his mind. And I really think that the expectations of Coach Peterson were that this team was going to make an advance this year from last year, and that 10 or 11 wins were in the cards. And when that didn't happen, especially the way it happened, that's going to be a tough thing to ever put out of your mind. But it's also a motivation that, I can really feel for him, because I hated to lose more than I loved to win. So, I'm sure that's going through his mind. And I think it'll be a motivation that he makes sure he's got the quality leadership in that locker room where that can't happen. You know, I've said right along that there was something wrong in the locker room for that to happen, period. And I think it was, that competitive leadership are some of the guys that he just brought in free agency.
And to that point, do you think that's why 32-year-old Mitch Morse, 30-year-old Ronald Darby, 30-year-old Eric Armstead? I mean, usually don't add three free agents 30 years old or older. The Jaguars did that, and that kind of speaks to what you're talking about, that veteran leadership.
Absolutely. I think that they felt like they needed competitive leadership in the locker room that was missing. I think they looked at it like, they got a little bit full of themselves, after how they finished last year and then what they did early in the season. I think that the veteran leadership, the competitive veteran leadership, is what culture is all about, in my opinion. And I think they, a bunch of those guys were captains on their football team. They've been with winning programs. They know what it's like to turn it up when they have to turn it up. And, they just hate to lose. And that, to me, is good for their locker room.
He's our head coach here on Hacker After Dark, my buddy Dave Campo. Coach, appreciate you joining us on short notice. Thank you for the insight, brother. We'll talk again soon.
Absolutely, Hack. Look forward to it. And let's go Jags.
Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
I believe so. I believe you can definitely get comfortable. You can kind of believe and read into the hype that's surrounding your football team. And, that's the one thing that you can't have, right? You got to guard against that, obviously. And that's something that I think our team is going to realize, moving forward.
Jaguar head coach Doug Peterson meeting the media earlier today down in Orlando at the NFL meetings. Jaguars.com streamed the entire press conference there. It wasn't really a press conference. It was like a breakfast type setting, sitting at a table, which is interesting because as you're watching it, like, you see Brian Callahan like in the table next to him. So
my boy D-Rock.
Right. The Nashville media is like right there talking about Calvin Ridley to Tennessee, 5 feet away from where Doug Peterson was sitting, which was kind of interesting. That was about the 8-3 collapse, Did it become mental for the Jaguars? What were the thoughts during the collapse? Were they comfortable at 8-3, and did they let their guard down? Well, yeah. I mean, I would think absolutely. Denmark, off the top of your head, do you remember what the 8th win was to get to 8-3?
Was it Houston?
It was Houston. It was the ball off the crossbar. Remember where they won? Houston lined up for like a 55-yarder. The backup kicker that they signed dinged the crossbar, and the Jaguars were 8-3, and you think the division's over because now they've equaled the tiebreaker with Houston. There's no way the Texans can catch them. You saw the celebration on the Jaguars sideline like they just won the Super Bowl, and they did not win another game for a month after that. And I don't even know if you can count the Carolina game. I think Wolfson High School could have beat Carolina towards the end of the year last year. That was their one win in the last 6 weeks. The comfortability after starting 8-3. Now, how do you remedy that? Well, you make some coaching changes, which Doug Peterson did with basically the entire defensive staff or most of it. And you bring in some veteran leaders. And normally I always have fun with the idea of veteran leadership. I remember when I did a show with Dempsey, way, way back in the day, we always used to joke around that you always talk about quality depth and veteran leadership for guys that aren't going to contribute very much.
Yeah, you got to add a quality to say something good about
right.
them.
Right. We signed Joe Blow to be the ninth offensive lineman because he's going to be quality depth and provide veteran leadership.
The best is he's a good locker room guy.
Right, good locker room guy. There are all those sayings. Although, in this particular instance, I think the Jaguars addressed veteran leadership, bringing in 30-year-old Ronald Darby, bringing in 32-year-old Mitch Morse, and bringing in 30-year-old Arik Armstead. The Jaguars did not have an awful lot of veteran type guys last year. They were a relatively young football team. Well, they went out and they brought in three veteran guys from San Francisco and Buffalo, and Darby has played everywhere, including Philadelphia and Baltimore. All winning cultures, right? Winning organizations. Let's talk about one of those guys, Arik Armstead. Doug Peterson was asked about the arrival of Arik Armstead earlier today down in Orlando.
First of all, he's played a ton of football. You know, Trent has familiarity with him, drafted him in San Francisco. He's been an outstanding player for them, obviously, and somebody, a player that, you know, we got Josh Allen, who's, you know, a fifth-year guy. Trayvon's a young second-year guy, or going into his third. This is somebody that can come in and I think can really, number one, help Trayvon, you know, continue to grow, but at the same time, give us what we need with the scheme that Ryan Nielsen wants to employ by having the pieces there. He can play defensive end. He can move inside on third down. He can, you know, same with Trayvon. He can play end. He can move inside. There's a lot of different things. And then you add Roy Robertson. You add Devon. You know Josh in there. I mean, there's a the making of a potentially good defensive line by adding a guy like Arik and his credibility, his work ethic, and just the amount of football and where he's played.
You know, I don't know how good the Jaguar defensive line is going to be, the defensive front, but I do know this. Man, they got some men up there. They have some large individuals. When you take into account Josh Allen, Trayvon Walker, and Arik Armstead, Roy Robertson Harris is a man up there as well. If Devon Hamilton can come back healthy, you know, you got guys like Tyler Lacy as well, who got some experience last year. Again, I think they need to add another one or two guys in the draft, particularly in the middle. But we've been talking so much about Armstead and Walker and Allen, and with good reason. I mean, keep in mind, Devon Hamilton was not Devon Hamilton last year. He had that setback in training camp. It cost him the first, what, 5 or 6 games of the regular season, maybe even more than that. And then he just wasn't himself. He wasn't the Devon Hamilton that earned that contract extension prior to last season. If Devon Hamilton can turn back in to that guy, we haven't even talked about him. I mean, Roy Robertson Harris is another one. That guy towards the end of 22 was a force. Last year was not a good year for Roy Robertson Harris. Can he revert back to the form he had at the end of 2022? So there is some potential on that defensive line, that defensive front, no question. But they are, if nothing else, they are large, large individuals. Final thought, at least for tonight, from Doug Peterson. Again, Jamal St. Cyr of Channel 4 was down in Orlando sitting at the round table earlier today. He joins us in less than 15 minutes. We had to get a thought about Trevor Lawrence, right? We're contractually obligated to get Doug Peterson's thoughts on Jaguar quarterback Trevor Lawrence. And what was interesting about some of the things that Trevor Lawrence, that Doug Peterson had to say about Trevor, the question was asked, I don't know who asked it, but I thought it was fair. Fans thought Trevor regressed last year. People thought Trevor regressed, was way worse than he was in 22. Dare I say, looked somewhat like he did as a rookie in 21 at certain times. Doug Peterson was asked about that, but he shed that very quickly, saying Trevor is light years ahead mentally from where he was his rookie season.
Just where he is mentally, you know, just the mental part. I mean, we got to get better as a football player, but mentally, you know, he's in a good place. And again, I wasn't here in 21, so I don't know, but I can only speculate and say that
he couldn't have been in a very good mental headspace coming out of that year. But now he's playing meaningful games. He's playing. He's taken the last 2 years, our team to the right there, and now we got to push through that. And so now it bothers him. That part bothers him, right? Football bothers him, and that's a good thing. And so that's where we got to get him pushing us through that envelope, that wall, and that's. I think the way. You know, going back to your point, I mean, the way we ended our season, I think that's his motivation too, you know.
Again, the thoughts of Jaguar head coach Doug Peterson in Orlando earlier today. Thank you to Jaguars.com. So he had a lot to say. He held court for about 30 minutes. Certainly the biggest things to me that came out of that conversation. Zay Jones, I brought this up with Lauren and Rick during the handoff, the two-minute drill there. Doug Peterson made it seem like today that Zay Jones was going to be a part of this team moving forward. And certainly I believe he is moving forward. Now, how far forward are we going? If the Jaguars draft somebody at 17 at the wide receiver position, let's just say it's Brian Thomas out of LSU for argument's sake. Well, then you have Brian Thomas, you have Christian Kirk, you have Gabe Davis, right? You got Parker Washington, who you got a draft pick invested in from last year. You got Devin Duvernay, who you brought in from Baltimore, who is capable of playing wide receiver. Is Zay Jones in the plans at that point if they take a wide receiver in round one? I don't know. If they take a receiver in round two, I think you could ask the same question. Although a wide receiver in round two, I tend to believe Zay would probably be more in the plans than if they take a wide receiver in round one. So I'm not confident yet that Zay is going to be here for the year. What I am confident in is Zay is going to be here until we figure out what happens at the draft. And maybe it's one of those deals where Zay comes to training camp and gets a chance to earn a spot. But again, if you have a round one wide receiver, if you have Christian Kirk, and if you have Gabe Davis, right, those are your three. Usually wide receiver 4 and 5 and even 6 are special teams guys. I don't know if Zay Jones is playing special teams. So we'll have to see how that situation plays itself out. But I thought that was interesting. Certainly the Darnell Savage aspect of this. Apparently he's going to be the nickel, right? He's the replacement for Trey Herndon. The way Doug Peterson made it sound earlier today with Antonio Johnson being the replacement for Rayshon Jenkins. So when you have a 5-DB setup, you're in your nickel package, barring any injuries, Tyson Campbell, Ronald Darby, Darnell Savage are going to be on the field with Antonio Johnson and Andre Sisco. I thought that was pretty interesting. And then what we talked about back in the first segment, Doug Peterson saying he doesn't know if he'll ever get over the collapse, losing 5 out of 6 to miss the postseason, but he's using that as motivation. And like we said, he needs to. Because you look around in this division, give the Titans credit, man. I mean, look, they had $1 billion to spend in free agency, and they basically did. I don't know how good they're going to be, but they brought in some guys. Lloyd Cushenberry, Tony Pollard, Kenneth Murray, Calvin Ridley over the weekend with Jarius Sneed, and they gave Sneed and Ridley huge dollars. They gave Cushenberry a huge contract. So they're all in. I guess they figured they needed to be, seeing as how good Jacksonville, Houston, and Indy were last year. But Tennessee's very competitive. We know Houston didn't really lose much. I mean, they lost Grenard, but they replaced him with Danielle Hunter. You lose Devin Singletary, you replace him with Joe Mixon. Does Houston have enough at wide receiver? I think is a question. Nico Collins, Tank Dell. We'll see what the future is for a guy like Robert Woods. But Houston was affected when Tank Dell got injured last year. I think they need another wide receiver. Maybe that's the direction they go early on in the draft. And as far as Indy goes, it's the unknown. Anthony Richardson played 170 snaps last year. And they still almost made the playoffs. They're running it back with pretty much their same nucleus, and they're bringing Anthony Richardson back. How good will Anthony Richardson be for the Colts? If he's good, they're going to be good. If he's not, well, they're probably going to have tough times. It's all going to come down to the quarterback. Around Anthony Richardson, they're fine. They proved that. With Gardner Minshew, they were a game out of the playoffs. You add Anthony Richardson to the mix, we'll see what happens. So the division is vastly improved. In fact, I'll be honest. A narrative about three of the four teams, Houston, Indy, and Tennessee, what that narrative was 12 months ago to where that narrative is now is 180 degrees. Can you ever remember a division in totality, in its entirety, turning around in the court of public opinion as quickly as the AFC South has? It was the worst division in football in August. People thought it was horrible. And here we are in March, 7 months later, and it might be the best division in football. In the conversation, look, you hate to do this, but tip your cap to Houston, Tennessee, and Indy, because they got really good really quick. And it's going to be up to Jacksonville to find that mojo that they had in 22 that they certainly did not have coming down the stretch of 2023. 641-1010 on the text line designed by Lifetime Enclosures. Your thoughts, welcome. Hacker After Dark in for Baloo, a Monday night edition here in 1010 XL and 92.5 FM. Coming up next, Jamal St. Cyr of Channel 4 was down in Orlando earlier today, was at the table where Doug Peterson talked. Jamal asked Doug Peterson a couple of questions, including the Antonio Johnson question. Is he the replacement for Rayshon Jenkins? We'll get Jamal on, talking about the Orlando trip, talking about the NFL meeting, and talking about what Doug Peterson had to say in relation to the Jaguar offseason. That's next. A Monday night in Jacksonville, Florida. And we're glad you're with us right here on Hacker After Dark.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. NFL meetings going on down in Orlando, Florida. Jaguar head coach Doug Peterson held court earlier this morning. Jamal St. Cyr of Channel 4 was right there at the press conference, and Jamal joins us here on Hacker After Dark. Jamal, I know it's been a busy day, man. How are you?
What's going on, Hacker? Pretty good. Look, can't complain. It's always fun. The NFL is a year-round thing, so they keep us busy all the time, right?
They do. There's no doubt about it. And you were center stage at the table this morning for Doug Peterson. A broad overview, Jamal. We have not had a chance to hear from him since free agency, right? The good and the bad. Ridley departs, all the guys that came in. We'll break down the individual sound bites in a moment, but just overall, your thoughts on what the head coach had to say this morning.
Look, I thought Doug was very open. I thought he was honest about a lot of stuff. First time we've heard from him in a while, and I thought he gave some really good insight on some of the guys they've added to this team, how they're planning on using them, maybe even if that's a little bit different than how we expected them to be used going in. At least I expected.
Yeah, and I think one of those things, and what's caught a lot of people on social media anyway, was the Darnell Savage comments. Darnell Savage is a safety from Green Bay, so we thought, but apparently they might have different plans for him in Jacksonville. What did you take away from what Doug said about Darnell Savage?
Well, it sounds like Savage is going to be the nickel moving forward, which is a big change from things. So we'll see if that's how things come together. If Savage is the nickel, Doug basically clarified and said, right now, you pencil him in there, you pencil Antonio Johnson in as your safety, I guess, replacement for Rayshon Jenkins. And that's going to give that defense a whole lot of flexibility because Antonio can also play that nickel spot in the slot, as we saw from him last season at times and as we saw from him in college. So it sounds like right now the Jaguars are looking at least playing more three safety looks than what we've seen in the past under new defensive coordinator Ryan Nielsen, which is a little bit of a stray from maybe what I was expecting. Look, Savage is definitely a talented guy, and using him in that role changes things a little bit for the way you look at that defense. I think a lot of people have been penciling in corner as this big, huge need for the team. But if you're penciling in Savage as your nickel, maybe corner isn't as pressing of a need because Darby can start for you on the outside and get the job done.
Jamal St. Cyr of Channel 4 was down in Orlando this morning at the Doug Peterson press conference down there at the NFL meetings. So, yeah, I mean, I'm trying to wrap my head around this. We've been talking about corner. We've been talking about all these different guys, the Alabama corners, right? Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo, DeJean from Iowa, all these mock drafts. So, I mean, Jamal, based on what Doug said this morning, are you going forward like I am thinking, all right, when you talk about corner, is it Tyson Campbell, Ronald Darby, and now Darnell Savage as your three top corners?
That's my takeaway. I mean, Doug kind of dropped the Savage as the nickel thing early on when someone asked about Savage. And then as like one of the last questions in the presser, you know, I just kind of doubled back and asked straight up, so is Savage your nickel or going to at least compete in that spot? And he said, right now, Savage is your nickel. Antonio's your guy that's going to replace Rayshon Jenkins. And Cisco's your other safety. And they're planning on using that to kind of give them some flexibility. So, yeah, you pencil Tyson in on one side, Darby on the other, and then you pencil in Savage in the slot, and you kind of feel pretty good. And if that was the plan that they were going with all along, then they're probably not that crazy about maybe needing a corner in the first round. I mean, unless a guy that they really love falls to them at 17, which is, look, that's ultimately what every team wants, is to be in a position where they feel like they can take the best player available.
Yeah, it's a good point. And again, this is the season where coaches put stuff out publicly because they know it'll blow up. Who knows if this is maybe a play to maybe get teams thinking they're not interested in corner. But take the coach at his word, right? The Darnell Savage news was certainly big. I thought another big piece, Jamal, this morning, and again, you were there. You could read the body language. You were talking to him directly. Boy, it certainly sounds like Zay Jones is going to be a part of this roster moving forward.
Well, I mean, here's the one thing. I think right now as the wide receiver room sits, Zay's here. Could that change? Sure. Could a lot of things change between now and the start of the season? I mean, things could get shaken up a lot, just depending on what they end up doing with that draft pick at 17 and even in the second round and how things shake out. But, yeah, right now, Zay is definitely a part of this team. I wouldn't expect Doug to really, like, get into contract situations and things of that nature at something like this. He leaves a lot of that kind of stuff to Trent. Yeah, look, I expected him to say, like, Zay's a part of what they're going to do right now. I expected him to say, look, we feel pretty good about having Gabe and Kirk and Zay. But he also mentioned twice during the time he sat and talked with us at the lead meeting that he also likes what he's seen from this rookie wide receiver class so far and thinks it's a really talented group.
You know, the way it sits right now, Christian Kirk, Gabe Davis, Zay Jones, Parker Washington, Devin Duvernay, and then you got the young guys, right? Like, guy like Tim Jones, I guess, although I don't think he's actually here necessarily. I think he's still maybe looking at the waters elsewhere. Elijah Cooks is in play. A lot of young guys after the initial five. It's going to be interesting to see if they add a wide receiver relatively high, because I think, Jamal, after the comments this morning, every mock draft you see moving forward is going to really shift Jacksonville to that wide receiver market.
Look, a lot of them have already had him going wide receiver. I mean, I've seen mocks through the roof that have had people falling in love with A.D. Mitchell from Texas, or even Brian Thomas Jr. from LSU. I know a lot of Jaguars fans have already got their kind of sights set, their hopes set, and their hearts set on landing one of those guys. I don't know if that's the route that they're going to go, but they're certainly opening the door to be able to take a guy that they really love on the board at 17. I never thought they'd pencil themselves into a corner and say that they had to draft a cornerback. Well, I used corner twice there on accident. But, yeah, I never thought that they'd kind of box themselves in like that, of forcing themselves to have to draft a corner in the first round, because a lot of things when you're at 17 can happen in those first 16 picks. You could wake up at 17 and be on cornerback 3 or cornerback 4 and all of a sudden be sitting there looking at the top edge player in the draft on the board and say, well, edge isn't really a need, but maybe they love Dallas Turner, or maybe they love Jared Verse, and he's a guy that they can't pass up on. Like, Hacker, we've talked about it before. This team has to find a way to get blue chip guys, like top of their position kind of players. And if you pencil yourself into having to draft something in a pick or in a slot, you're opening yourself up to pass up on those kind of blue chip, top notch kind of talents. And you can't do that.
Couple of more for Jamal St. Cyr of Channel 4, who was down at the NFL meetings in Orlando talking with Doug Peterson earlier today. Jamal, you and I talked right after free agency, and we touched on Gabe Davis. But I don't know if you are, man, but I'm very surprised at the negative feedback nationally. Not so much locally, but nationally. I've had a lot of guys on that just have annihilated the Jaguars bringing in Gabe Davis, and I'm surprised at the negative feedback the Jaguars are receiving for that. What's your thought there?
Look, I think the Gabe Davis feedback, I don't get some of it. Like, I understand it. Look, he was hot and cold in Buffalo. There's no way around that. I mean, he was up and down, and they never quite knew necessarily what he was going to show up with. He could show up one week and get 100 yards and a tutty or two, and then another week, you know, he was basically, if you looked at the box score, he didn't show up. So it was tough to figure out Gabe in Buffalo. But as Doug Peterson pointed out, he was a high-volume player who was a big part of that Buffalo offense. And the one thing that you know, and that Doug Peterson and his coaching staff love from their receivers, Gabe Davis is going to show up to block. And, I mean, Gabe said it in his introductory press conference. He was cool with rolling in and blocking through the C-gap, if that's need be. So with that in mind, adding a guy like Gabe is huge because you're getting a big, stocky receiver that don't mind sticking his nose in. That's one of the things they've loved about Zay Jones is that Zay goes in there and blocks. So does Christian. I mean, those are guys that will go in and don't mind doing the dirty work that some receivers don't mind doing. Gabe Davis is another guy kind of in that vein. The question is, can they balance it out? Can they get him to find that consistency that was missing at times in Buffalo, where those Bills fans kept thinking he was going to take this next step into that upper echelon of receiver, and it never quite materialized? Maybe Doug Peterson and Press Taylor and Trevor Lawrence can help him figure that out here in Jacksonville.
You mentioned Press Taylor. I thought one of the interesting comments Doug Peterson made today, and it really started with some things Evan Ingram's been saying. Look, Evan Ingram had a ridiculous year last year. He was 2 receptions shy of the all-time record for a single season for tight ends in the National Football League. And yet, Jamal, he didn't go over 1,000 yards, right? I mean, he had a lot of 3- and 4-yard button hooks, and he tried to get yardage after the catch, but he just did not surpass 1,000 yards. And I'm sorry, when you have 110-plus catches, you need to be a 1,000-yard guy. At least that's my opinion on it. But, and apparently Evan agrees with that because he's been telling people that he wants to do more things downfield, and it sounded like to me this morning that Doug Peterson – is very much aware of that, and they're going to try to accomplish that this season.
Well, look, we'll see what happens. Ultimately, somebody's got to be that short route kind of guy. And right now, I mean, at least last season, Evan Ingram played the safety blanket, the safety valve a lot. So he was catching those short passes, and the Jags trusted him to be the guy who could pick up a couple yards after catch, break a tackle or two, and go use his legs to do something. And I mean, one of the conversations that I've at least had when looking at this Jaguars offense is, and Hacker, I want you to chime in on this. Like, who's their yak guy? Like, if you need to throw a screen or a short pass and say, all right, that guy's going to turn this 2-yard throw into a 10-yard pickup, who's that guy? Who do you trust on the offense? To me, your best yak guy is Evan Ingram.
Yeah, I think he is right now. Now, again, that's subject to change in a month. We'll see what happens in round 1 or 2 of the NFL draft. I wonder if Gabe Davis potentially could be that guy. I mean, Gabe Davis did have a 98-yard touchdown in 2022. I mean, the guy's got 27 touchdowns in his career. So you wonder what potentially that could be. But you know Christian Kirk's game. You know Zay Jones' game. And the thing with Gabe Davis, quickly to circle back to him, Jamal, because I want to ask you a couple more things about Doug. The Gabe Davis venom, I guess, nationally, to me has a lot of Christian Kirk vibes 2 years ago. These same people that are ripping the Gabe Davis signing are probably the same ones, Jamal, that ripped the Christian Kirk signing 2 years ago. And they've been awfully quiet about Christian Kirk now that he's showing what he can do on the field. I wonder if Gabe Davis in this offense will have similar results.
I don't know. Look, I think you're right. I think it's that same vein. I wasn't saying Christian Kirk. I was saying actually the Zay Jones signing from a couple of years ago, because people didn't think that Zay was going to be a big part of the Jaguars offense. Lo and behold, he went on to have like one of the best seasons of his career with Trevor Lawrence and Doug that season. Last year, injuries kind of sidetracked things. Look, I think the Jaguars wouldn't have gone after Gabe if they didn't have a vision for his talent and his skill set. And if one thing is clear from the wide receivers that Trent Baalke's brought in since Doug Peterson is here, is that they have a vision for the kind of receivers they need for that offense. I mean, Zay Jones wasn't nobody was throwing a party when the Jaguars signed Zay, right? Like, Zay wasn't a high priority free agent for a lot of teams. The Jaguars went out, got him, signed him to a solid contract and said, he's one of our starters. Zay showed up. Zay's made some big catches for the Jaguars to the point where last year when he was missing games, people were calling for Zay to get back on the field because they were saying he was the missing piece, you know? And then Christian Kirk, same thing. He had never been a 1,000-yard receiver. They saw the vision. They give him the big-time contract. He shows up. And, I mean, if you want to see how important Christian Kirk is to that offense, look at the games last season where Christian Kirk wasn't playing. Enough said. When he plays, the Jaguars' offense is a different beast. That's just who Christian Kirk is. He is that kind of guy. I think they have a similar vision for Gabe in this offense. Maybe it's changed a little bit because I think that at one point when they signed him, they thought they were going to have Calvin Ridley as a part of that equation with Gabe. But now that that didn't materialize, I still believe they have a vision for his skill set and what he's going to be able to do on this team. Because it's pretty clear that they're good at projecting what these wide receivers can be in this system.
Final moments, Jamal St. Cyr of Channel 4. Jamal, as we wrap up, you mentioned Calvin Ridley. That didn't really come up all that much. I think Doug was asked one question about it, spoke on it briefly. For as much as the fan base thought that was a Gordon Solie shot to the solar plexus, the head coach really didn't talk much Calvin Ridley earlier today.
He was only asked one question, to be fair. And, I mean, look, ultimately, the past is the past. He's gone. If anybody wanted to know about Calvin Ridley, they can go ask his new head coach. He was like two tables away.
Yeah, I saw that. That was interesting that Brian Callahan was so close. Final question, Jamal. Another Doug Peterson soundbite is the collapse, right, as we've called it, 5 out of 6 to end the year. Doug Peterson essentially said today that he may never get over that. I mean, you could tell. I mean, we're 2.5 months, darn near 3 months removed from the season, and boy, it looks like it still eats at him what happened in the last 6 weeks.
Those are the types of things that stick with somebody. Look, that changes the way you look at stuff. It changes the way you kind of handle stuff. I don't think Doug Peterson is going to forget it. I definitely don't think he's going to forget it as he gets ready for next season. I would hope that many of the players that were on the roster that are back next season have not forgotten what that was and how it felt to collapse late in the season and the question marks there. I mean, there's something about being a part of something like that, especially like when we've talked about it ad nauseum at this point. On a team like the Jaguars, where they came in and they wanted to change the commentary around the team, change the reflection of them around the NFL, and then you have a collapse like that from 8-3 to mid-offs, and where people are saying maybe that's the biggest and worst collapse in franchise history. And there's been a lot of bad history with the Jags. So that says something when you can say, and people can agree, that it might be the worst of something for history. I think that's the type of thing you take personally. He's a Super Bowl winning coach, and he wants to get back to another Super Bowl. And in order to do that, you can't take an 8-3 record and flush it down the toilet. And that's what happened. So now he's got to figure out how, if there's something that he could have done practice-wise, player management-wise, or even game plan-wise that he can change. Those small tweaks are the types of things that coaches change from year after year on how they deal with the players, deal with the locker room, to try and make sure that something like that never happens again, because it really was a snowball effect. We saw the mistakes early in the season, and then the injuries happened, and the train really went off the track. So the question is, and I'm sure he's replaying in his mind, just like a lot of people do. Shucks, I still replay football scenarios from my short-lived football career, which was now many years removed, of plays, and thinking, oh, well, if I'd have stepped this way, I could have changed this and done that. I guarantee he's going to be replaying those games for a while and really sticking with some of the decisions he made and questioning if he should make some slight tweaks moving forward. I could see that.
You see Jamal St. Cyr on Channel 4, and he's always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL in Jacksonville. Jamal, safe travels home from Orlando. We certainly appreciate it, man. We'll talk soon.
All right. Appreciate you, Hacker. Anytime.
This is Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
Yes, it is. In for Blue. Blue 3-6 with Lauren Brooks this week as Frangie and Carline enjoy a little bit of vacay. I'll be 6-8 most of the week here on 1010XL and on 92.5 FM. Certainly a lot more Jaguars to come the remainder of the week. NFL meetings continue down in Orlando. And the NFL draft 1 month from tonight. Yeah, we are 1 month away from the National Football League draft, the first round, up there in Detroit, Michigan. Coming up next, let's turn our attention to March Madness. How's your bracket looking? Boy, I took it on the chops in round one, although I kind of rebounded a little bit. I actually have 12 of the Sweet 16 remaining, 7 of the Elite 8, and I have all 4 of my Final 4. Florida season came to an end. We'll certainly spend some time there. We'll talk about the troubles in the Southeastern Conference. And is anybody going to beat UConn? Remember, nobody has repeated since Florida did. Is UConn going to be the first team since the Gators to go back-to-back? We'll talk about all of it with Mark Wise of ESPN. The man is a college basketball encyclopedia, and he joins me next. Hacker After Dark on a Monday night right here in Jacksonville, Florida. We're talking March Madness with Mark Wise with you on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. We have gone from 68 down to 16 in a very short amount of time. I don't know how your bracket looks, but mine got busted up pretty good. Although, as we welcome Mark Wise in from ESPN, Mark, I still have 12 of my 16, I actually still have 7 of my Elite 8. I took it on the chops in round one. But miraculously, I don't think 12 out of 16 is that bad right now.
No, I don't think so either. My bracket looks like one of my college English papers right now. It's got so many red marks on it. But I'm like you. Remember you asked me last week about this, and I said, you know, I always look for 8 to 1, 10 to 1 kind of shots in terms of my horse racing Kentucky background. But I thought it was going to be a lot of chalk. I think it's the first time that the number ones and number twos have all survived in, I don't know, the last 8 or 10 years or something. So I think it's going to be that way moving forward. Somebody asked me about my Final Four today, and I said, it's the 4 number ones. I mean, how can you go against them at this point in time?
Yeah, the way they're looking, no question. In fact, I think the only double-digit seed left is NC State. And they're far from a Cinderella as they went on to win the ACC tournament prior to the big dance. All right, Mark, let's go back to Friday. The Gator season comes to an end, an incredible game. Colorado, give them credit. They won it there in the final seconds. What did you take away from Florida's loss last Friday?
Well, if you didn't have a dog in the race, it was a fabulous game. First time since, 2015, 2013, that two teams both had over 100 or more in a game. I think both coaches in their interviews lamented Tad Boyle and Todd Golden about the lack of defense in the game. That doesn't bother me as a fan. It would bother me as a coach. Neither team could get stops. And I think what Clayton did down at the last 5 minutes of that game, what he scored like Florida's last 52 points, I think, in the game. So it was a fabulous comeback. Everybody wants to complain about the officiating, the lack of call at the end. Did Simpson push off in order to create separation? Of course he did. Does that get called in that moment? Of course it doesn't. So It was too bad, really, in watching the game that somebody had to lose that game.
Mark Wise of ESPN here with us on 1010XL in Jacksonville. Mark, Todd Golden wraps up year number two, and you and I talked about him last week. But now that it's in the rearview mirror, I would think a success for Todd Golden, right, his second year in Gainesville.
I don't think there's any question about it. The problem in this day and age of the transfer portal is success is not guaranteed 1 year to the next because there's just so much rollover. And the term I'm going to use for the next 3 months is roster construction, because that's what it used to. We no longer can say recruiting, because recruiting implies freshmen in my world. So I think you have to put together a roster and remember that they didn't get Pullen until, I want to say, June last year, so they're going to have to work the portal like everybody else in terms of in terms of finding players. I do think this. I think they'll have, and everybody wants to know about Pullen and Samuel. I think they'll have a harder time replacing Zion Pullen than they will Tyrese Samuel. That's not to minimize what Samuel did on the year, but you would like to think with the development and the return of Condon and Houck and the return of Handlogden that those guys will all be better. So you may not need somebody with the production of a Tyrese Samuel, but you definitely need to replace the point guard.
So you just said it right there. Final thought on Florida before we branch out. To me, next year, your building blocks are Houck, Condon, and hopefully Handlogden comes back 100%. You mix Aberdeen in there. I believe he'll be back. To me, the question is Will Richard. I would have to think Kugel's gone in the portal. I don't know that, just my assumption. And I would have to think Walter Clayton may go pro. So to me, the building blocks are the three bigs, the young bigs, and Handlogden, Condon, and Houck, and Will Richard being the big question right. mark.
Well, I think, yes, I agree with your assessment. I don't know that Clayton can or will go pro. I always say if you can, if you can get in the first round. Nobody has him in the first round. And remember, Clayton's back half of the year was much better, much more consistent than his front half of the year. If he comes back, that's a big difference. Then Will Richard's no longer the key in terms of a returning building block. So Kugel's the wild card in it all. It'll be real interesting to see how his situation plays out over the next couple of months, and I have no idea what direction he's leaning.
Mark Wise of ESPN. Mark, you called SEC games for the last 3.5 months. You saw almost every team in the conference. Yeah. It was a great regular season. Man, yeah. What happened? It was a bloodbath, 2-6 out of this weekend.
Well, they did pick up the third game because Alabama and Tennessee both won to get in the Sweet 16. Here's the one thing that I don't know how anybody could see it coming. And I told you last week I really liked Auburn, and the player that I really liked because of Auburn was Chad Baker-Mazzara. And when he gets tossed in the first 3 minutes of the game, it's no different than having an injured player who can't play. The only difference is Auburn didn't have the benefit of a day or two to practice if he had been hurt, if he had turned his ankle. So I think they kind of got shell-shocked. I still think they should have won. If Auburn had won their game, I think our perception of how the league did might have changed. I get the Oakland, Kentucky upset. But what do we say about, as you well know, I've said for many years now, you got to make shots in the tournament. Did Oakland make shots or did Kentucky not be able to defend? Maybe a little bit of both, but at the end of the day, when a guy makes 10 threes, you're going to have a hard time losing.
Yeah, you tip your cap to that guy, no question about it. Speaking of Kentucky, the natives are restless, right? Is there trouble in Lexington when it comes to John Calipari?
Well, I think the noise is probably never going to be louder. I'm real curious as we're entering this coaching carousel that kind of the lead domino that needed to happen was Dusty May, and kind of everything's going to fall off of that in terms of what Vanderbilt does. And I think Mark Byington's in the mix there in terms of what Louisville does. And I don't know where they're headed now, in terms of Kentucky, the thing that I liked about Cal this year was that he embraced the changes offensively. He got modernized. He for the first time, wrapped his arms around the three-point shooting. Now, I say the same thing, Hacker, that I've said to you before. Kentucky wasn't built to defend. If you want to be a good defensive team, you've got to have team speed. They're very average. You got to have great length. They're below average, except at one position. And then you've got to have the ability to impact shots at multiple positions. They had very little of that. So, and I can put Florida in the same boat. If you don't have pineapple, it's hard to make pineapple upside down cake. And so those teams were never going to be great defensive teams. Alabama is never going to be a great defensive team. It's the same situation. But, man, were those three teams fun to watch on the offensive end.
The two SEC teams left standing are Alabama and Tennessee. What do you think of their chances moving forward?
Well, here's how I'll answer that. I think I told you last week I didn't trust Alabama, but I liked their draw. And I thought they could survive that pod. Tennessee is an interesting scenario because I think ghosts of lack of offense in ball land raised its ugly head the other day. I know they won and survived, and that's the name of the game. But they played spooky to me. They played spooked and spooky in terms of their offensive production. And if they can't score against Creighton, I don't care how good their defense is, they are not going to win the game. I think the two best Sweet 16 matchups are the two late games on Thursday and Friday. And I forget what order they're in, but Tennessee-Creighton is a fascinating matchup. And Illinois-Iowa State is a fascinating matchup because of the contrast in strengths in terms of a great offensive team in Illinois versus a great defensive team in Iowa State.
Couple of more from Mark Wise of ESPN talking Sweet 16 with us here on 1010XL in Jacksonville. Mark, you mentioned the four number ones and the four number twos. First time in a while that all eight of those teams have gotten through opening weekend. They're all in the Sweet 16. I got to tell you, man, the number ones have been dominating in their own way.
Yeah.
Florida fans think it's a badge of honor that they're the last back-to-back champion. Well, UConn's going to put a scare into them, are they not? UConn's playing ridiculous right now.
I couldn't agree more. I look at teams, and I want to know – one of the things I want to know as an old coach and now a broadcaster is how many different ways can you win a game? Can you win a game on your offense when you're having trouble getting stops? Can you win a game on your defense when your shots aren't falling? Can you win a tempo game in the 60s? Can you win a fast-paced game in the 90s? UConn, more than any other team remaining in the field, can answer all of those questions. I think they can win games in more different ways with more different players leading the way than any other team left standing.
As far as the other number ones, Houston, to me, probably looks the most vulnerable. That's probably because A&M played out of their mind to get that game to overtime last night. Purdue has been dominating, and I thought North Carolina looked very good against Michigan State. What's your thought on the other three number ones outside of UConn?
Well, here's the thing. It's much like I mentioned, Alabama had a great draw last week. I think Houston's draw in their regional is okay for them. I don't think there's anybody who can match their physicality. Maybe NC State a little bit, but I'm not sure NC State can get past Marquette with Kolick back in the field. Purdue has, I think, the toughest two games to get through in terms of Gonzaga and then either Creighton or Tennessee. I think North Carolina will beat Alabama. I think it'll be 95 to 88 or something like that. The Clemson-Arizona game, I think, is fascinating. I think the combination of Shiflin and P.J. Hall has given everybody problems in the tournament. I know that people, and I don't see a lot of Arizona. I've seen them on late night a lot. I haven't seen them live. I know a lot of people think that Arizona has the size to compete with UConn. Here's my issue about Arizona every time I see them. They take plays off on the defensive end, and they kind of rely on their offense. And the offense is varied, it's balanced, it can be inside, it can be outside. But when you're built that way, like Alabama, like Florida has been, that you're asking for trouble. I think that's another good game in terms of Clemson, Arizona.
You mentioned Clemson. For those that did not watch a lot of Clemson, I'll raise my hand. Forgive me, I did not watch a lot of Clemson Tiger basketball. How did this happen? I remember they were one of the ones that got left at the altar last year, right? Their bubble burst, and they did not get in the tournament. And now all of a sudden they're in the Sweet 16 for the first time since 2018.
Well, they're one of the older teams in terms of the combination of P.J. Hall and Shiflin that I mentioned. And then Joe Girard, I think, is in his 19th year of collegiate athletics as a guard who gives them experience there. They've got some three-point shooters that complement. They're a very difficult out because they play sort of, I want to say they play a yin and yang style, meaning they can run at times, they can slow it down at times. And Arizona just wants to go fast. They want to play fast, shoot fast. So that's a really interesting matchup. But that's how they did it. They added some pieces in the portal. They're older, smarter team. And, you know, Brad Brunell, who has kind of become the hot seat annual basis, I think that's going away. This dude can coach, man.
Final moments with Mark Wise of ESPN. All right, Mark, as we turn for home, all right, who are we talking about next week? Your final four. You mentioned the one seeds. Is it that simple? Are you going all the number ones?
It's the KISS theory, man. Keep it simple, stupid. It's the four number ones for me. I just don't see any of them getting beat. I think that big sigh that you heard across the country was from not only the Purdue program, Matt Painter, the West Lafayette community, Purdue alumni. I think they'll play freer. I don't see anybody being able to match up with Zach Edey inside, and that seems a little silly to say that, but I really think right now, I think UConn and Purdue are on a collision course.
Mark Wise of ESPN. Mark, odds are when you turn on one of the ESPN family of networks during college basketball, you're going to see Mark Wise on one of those channels. I know your season's not done yet. You got a couple of games coming up this week.
Not yet. I'm covering the CBI semifinals starting tomorrow night, Tuesday night at 7 o'clock, and then we have the finals on Wednesday at 5 o'clock before the NIT games come on the Deuce. So Roy Philpott and I, who we've worked together many times over the last 4 or 5 years, I'm a late fill-in for Joe Lunardi, and I'm looking at it as maybe it's the Lou Gehrig Wally Pipp moment.
Mark Wise of the ESPN family of networks. Mark, you are the man. I know you're busy, brother. Thank you for taking time out. Hopefully we can catch up next week and preview the Final Four.
That'd be great, man. Thanks.
And thank you to Mark Wise of ESPN for joining us tonight here on Hacker After Dark. As, look, it was an interesting couple of days. We've gone from 68 all the way down to 16. Some surprises, right? I mean, you got six SEC teams that do not get past opening weekend. Florida obviously gets upset in the first round. You had great stories like Oakland over Kentucky, Yale over Auburn, Grand Canyon over St. Mary's. But now things have kind of settled down, right? I think there's only one double-digit seed remaining, which is North Carolina State. All the one seeds remain. I believe all the two seeds remain as well. So certainly a lot of compelling basketball still to go, but we really don't have that true Cinderella. I wouldn't call NC State a Cinderella. Yeah, they are an 11 seed, but they're certainly an upper-tier ACC program. We'll see what happens, though. Obviously, I still like Purdue to win the national title. My Final Four is still intact. In fact, I thought I was doing terrible in the bracket. Come to find out, of the 20 or so people here at the station that went in for some matchsticks, I'm fourth out of 20 right now, which was shocking to me when I saw that. But I have 12 of the Sweet 16 still left, and I have 7 of my Elite 8 still left. So a lot of chalk ultimately did hold as we got further along into round two of the NCAA tournament. Well, that'll just about do it. It has been a very busy Monday evening here on Hacker After Dark. A lot of interesting comments earlier today down in Orlando by Jaguar head coach Doug Peterson. Some of the big takeaways for me was, I mean, obviously the Darnell Savage Antonio Johnson thing is unbelievably interesting. Darnell Savage, the safety from Green Bay that we thought was going to be Rayshon Jenkins' replacement, turns out that may not necessarily be the case. Maybe Darnell Savage gets more of a look at nickel, and Antonio Johnson is indeed the replacement for Rayshon Jenkins. So now when you're talking about the Jaguar cornerback spot, you mentioned Tyson Campbell, you mentioned Ronald Darby, you probably mentioned Darnell Savage among those as well, which is certainly something that I did not expect to be talking about tonight. Certainly appreciate the head coach Dave Campo for joining us a little impromptu Monday night coaching with Campo to give his thoughts not only on the Darnell Savage aspect of this, but Antonio Johnson too. Here's a young kid, fifth round pick in the 2023 draft. Certainly got in and played a good amount of football towards the end of the year, but it appears he will be the replacement for Rayshon Jenkins alongside Andre Sisco back there in the Jaguar secondary. I also thought it was interesting that for the here and now, certainly the way Doug Peterson was talking, Zay Jones is going to be a part of this team moving forward. There was certainly a lot of question about that, but when you lose Calvin Ridley, now you have Zay Jones, Gabe Davis, and Christian Kirk as your big three wide receivers, at least for the here and now, depending on what the Jaguars do a month from tonight in the NFL draft. And I thought Doug Peterson was very telling when he said, look, the collapse, as we referred to it, losing 5 out of 6 to end the year, that hasn't gone away. I'm paraphrasing here. I don't have the exact quote, but Doug Peterson basically said he doesn't think he'll ever quite get over it, right? You learn from it. You hope to grow from it and move on, but that still eats at the Jaguar head coach. Having an 8-3 season, being the number one seed in the AFC for a couple of hours there in week 12, and essentially flushing it all away, losing 5 out of 6 and missing the playoffs. Again, the Jaguars were just the sixth team, number six, the sixth team since the year 2000 to miss the playoffs after starting 8-3 during the year. So really thought there was some good stuff from Doug Peterson. Enjoyed talking about that tonight. We had Dave Campo on to break that down. Also my buddy Jamal St. Cyr of Channel 4, who was down in Orlando at that Jaguar table this morning talking to the Jaguar head coach. So appreciate Jamal joining us on what has been a very busy day for him. And again, thank you to Mark Wise of ESPN talking a little NCAA tournament with us. We will be back tomorrow night on a Tuesday, and we will do it all over again beginning at 8 o'clock. Dylan Denmark was your producer tonight. Dylan, great job as always. I'm the hacker, Ryan Green. And again, Jacksonville, thank you for spending part of your Monday evening with us right here on Hacker After Dark on 1010XL and on 92.5 FM. So for all of us here on HAD, have an absolutely terrific remainder of your Monday evening, and we will talk to you again tomorrow night on a Tuesday beginning at 8 o'clock. Until then, good night, Jacksonville.